With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
It's Wednesday, it's Football Social Daily, and it's match day for England. Poland, the opponents tonight for Gareth Southgate's side. The three lions in cruise control in their World Cup qualification group, but tonight will surely be the toughest test of the three games so far. The lethal Lewandowski back for the Poles this evening too. We'll look ahead to that game in Warsaw, as well as the news that Jesse Lingard has rejected a new Manchester United deal. We ask, what was the point, Jesse, when you could have moved clubs this summer? Plus, some positive news for fans as UEFA lift their ban on travelling away supporters in European competitions, but there are still hoops to jump through for British clubs. All that to come with me, Niall McCaughan, in the company of Ian Brannan. Good morning, Ian.
Hi, good morning. Great to be here. I'm just going to flag this up from the start. I've got my studio doors open because it's 3 billion degrees even in Sunderland, so goodness knows how hot it must be elsewhere in the country. So if you do hear the occasional passing car or a seagull or an angry bin man, then that's probably what it is.
Well, actually, the last time we had a heat wave, you were also on the podcast, but you had that weird mist cloud over your house and your temperature inside your house was about 10 degrees cooler than everywhere else.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. It is always 10 degrees cooler, even though we've got no mist cloud today. That's the exciting thing. So, you know, 22 degrees in Sunderland is like, must be about 40 degrees everywhere else. So, it's sweltering here. But being in a box for an hour or so with the doors shut tight, it could be a bit restrictive. So
doesn't
we need a bit
sound
of air.
Like your idea of fun. But we're going to press on anyway. Anytime the needle touches 20 here in Manchester, it is classed as tropical, I would say. Also with us, Joel Tudor from the Sports Social team. How are you doing, Joel?
Oh, good. Good morning. Good morning.
You've gone with a jumper today. I was a bit surprised when I wandered into the office and you had the jumper on.
Hear me out on this one. I've done it very strategic because I know that the office is quite a subdued temperature, and also Manchester has a bit of a tendency to change weather.
It does
within about 5 minutes, so you know, got to come prepared as a Mancunian.
It is cool. We do have air conditioning in the office, by the way, so that's an
just
excuse.
So everyone doesn't think I'm a strange guy.
Well, we'll find out throughout the course of the podcast whether Joel truly is strange or not. No, I'm joking. We're going to start by talking about Poland against England. England's final game of the international break takes place this evening. And in the two games they've had before now, 2-4-0 wins for Gareth Southgate's side against Hungary first up and then Andorra at the weekend. I mean, do you expect a similar scoreline versus Poland, Ian, or are they a far tougher opponent? You'd like to suggest that Poland will probably give England a much more rigorous test than Hungary and Andorra did.
Yeah, Poland are really it is the big match in this group, isn't it? It's the only sort of serious match with the best will in the world. I mean, seeing what's happened to Hungary, I mean, the rest, you know, Andorra, they're not really, you know, we've played a second team against Andorra in effect. Full strength side expected tonight from Gareth Southgate, the same sort of lineup that was fielded in the Euros. Definitely going to be taken a lot more seriously. And you know, they have got a big threat. And I've been speaking to a friend of mine because, you know, I do the Speedway podcast, and the sport of Speedway is the second biggest sport behind football in Poland. It's absolutely massive.
Yeah.
So I've been speaking to a Polish sports journalist just this morning, and just replying now, actually, to a couple of questions I asked him about the Polish team to give us a bit of a perspective on how this match is seen in Poland, because obviously that's where it's happening. It's a big event. And he says that... you know, well, I'll give you his reply. He says that the England match is something special for Poland, the team and the fans. And they still go back to 1973 at Wembley when their goalkeeper, Jan Tomaszewski, saved every strike and it finished 0-0. Maybe it's a more important match than Poland versus Germany for them. It
wow.
is the game, Poland versus England. Sousa is building an atmosphere. It's a chance to win a group. Wasn't a bad match when they played at Wembley. The fans are believing that they can get a win. And he's also given us a few tips about players to watch out for. I know we're going to talk more about Lewandowski in a mo, but we'll come to that soon. So just to give a bit of perspective, really, you know, this is the match of all matches, not just in this group, but Poland versus England. They love it over there, so they're going to be proper fired up for this. So, yeah, it's got that riding on it too. You know, regardless of the teams on paper, for Poland, this is their game. This is their, you know, I suppose, you know, for us, it's England versus Germany, isn't it? But for them, it's Poland versus England. So they're fired up for it for sure.
Yeah, really interesting insight that, actually, to consider that game for them bigger to face England than it is to face Germany. I think that's quite something. And actually, you know, England, we joke about how, you know, we've had however many years of hurt, as the Three Lions song goes. And, you know, we reached the final of the Euros and semi-finals in 1990 of the World Cup, the semi-finals in 2018. And it's, oh, you know, woe is England, we never win anything. But actually, despite the fact that we've kind of fallen short in the international scene in tournaments for however many years, England is still seen as a big side, a big international team that other countries love to come and play. That probably would have been the case with the Andorrans as well last time out, Joel. But Gareth Southgate knows that they're not quite as tough as an opposition as Poland are. He made 11 changes for that Andorra game. Patrick Bamford was one of them. Do you think he'll keep his place against Poland, or are we likely to see Harry Kane just come straight back in?
I'm trying to still suss out Gareth Southgate's kind of philosophy when it comes to choosing his players, because as we saw, I think there was a bit of a running joke where Grealish suddenly started as soon as he got his big money move to Manchester City. Not to say that City are one of the big clubs. But no, I think with Bamford, he's got the very, very difficult task of replacing an England captain who's, you know, guaranteed goals up front. With Bamford, obviously, his Leeds form was impressive last season, but it's going to take an absolutely monstrous effort or a vital injury to Harry Kane to actually allow him to sneak into the side. And even still then, I feel like the options of Calvert-Lewin would probably be a far more suitable replacement for the actual England side, especially with how they play. But it would be interesting to see how Bamford does settle into the England side. But I feel as though it's Southgate giving him the opportunity to actually experience the England team and set up. I don't think that Southgate sees him as an integral part of the squad leading up to Qatar 2022.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting debate, one we've had on the podcast before, Ian, about Patrick Bamford and where he possibly slots into the England setup. We know he deserved his call-up, if not for what he did last season, rather than the three games he's had this campaign, which obviously isn't a great barometer of form or anything like that. But certainly, I think Joel's got a point that, you know, as a striker in the England setup, it is very much, am I going to get a game ahead of Harry Kane? But I suppose for some players, it's more than that, isn't it? It's the pride of being able to represent your country. I mean, I know you're biased towards Leeds, but I mean, can you expect Bamford to be involved again tonight? Do you think it'll be more likely off the bench rather than a start?
Yeah, definitely off the bench. I think it'll be one Leeds player in and one out, and I think Calvin Phillips will be back in the starting lineup again. As I say, very much akin to the you know, Euros semis and finals and so on. The side tonight is going to be treated with, you know, the utmost respect, and with all due respect to Patrick Bamford, he is second in the pecking order, at least to Harry Kane. So Kane, I'm pretty sure, will start. Maybe we'll see Patrick Bamford for 20 minutes. I'd like to remind all the fans of Manchester United, Arsenal, you remember when they were a thing, Tottenham and all that, that, you know, when Calvin Phillips first started for England, what, 6 months, 8, 9 months ago. You know, there was all sorts of teeth sucking going on of why is he in the team? He's not good enough. What, yeah. I can't work out where he goes. What does he do? And now he's the first name on the team sheet.
Well, he won the award, didn't he, for the England Player of the Year for 2020, 21.
But look, you go back and look at some of the comments from his first match or even first two or three matches, and they couldn't figure out what Gareth Southgate was doing. These players do something different to what you've already got, and Patrick Bamford himself has said he's not Harry Kane. He's not a replacement for Harry Kane. He does something different. The thing that annoyed me in the Andorra match was how selfish a lot of the other players were. You know, it was just hit and hope from their forward lines. You know, they get the ball and they were all having a dip. They weren't passing to him. He needs the ball played into him. And similarly, he is very important in the Leeds team in creating goals. And yeah, he gets a lot of thing about, well, yeah, he's not scoring as many goals. And last season he did. He got, what, 17 goals, which is pretty good. But he sets so many up as well and holds up the play, and that is his job. He's just an absolute nightmare for defenders. And so the system has to adapt a little bit, but in a positive way. You know, it's a different way of playing, but it changes the game. If you're playing a game and you've got Harry Kane and you're not getting anywhere, what are you going to do? Put another player on who's exactly the same just to have another go? You know, you want to change the system and change the style of play. So that's what he brings. And you've got to give him time. You can't just stick him in there once and say, well, it doesn't work. I think that if Patrick Bamford had stayed on, I mean, it wasn't long after Harry Kane came on that, you know, England started getting somewhere. I think Patrick Bamford would have got a goal in that Andorra match. And, you know, I could see it tonight. He just plays differently. And people need to give it time and just chill out and stop going, hey, it's not Harry Kane. Oh, we've got better strikers. What about Mason Greenwood? Stop going on about it. You've got to give him time to settle in.
Yeah, one game is not exactly a great cross-section of his ability, is it? One game against an Andorra side in which, as you say, there were a few experiments from Gareth Southgate and players taking shots, and Jesse Lingard was, you know, in the mood to try his luck. And we'll come on to Lingard a bit later. But talking of those experiments, Joel, Trent Alexander-Arnold played in midfield, and there are a few other sort of methods tried out by Southgate. I guess he can afford to do that against someone like Andorra, where, let's face it, England are going to beat them anyway. They're ranked 151st in the world. But someone like Poland, is probably less likely we're going to see Trent Alexander in midfield, and we are going to probably see, as Ian says, Phillips come back in and probably revert to the side that we saw and became so familiar with during the Euros.
Yeah, I think Trent Alexander-Arnold's an interesting one because everyone knows his talents and his technical ability and his passing distribution. I feel as though Southgate, he understands that, but he also understands that he's definitely not the best right back in the England setup. For me, I definitely view Walker and Trippier as the more kind of better suited in the system that he plays. And I feel like he's desperately trying to find a solution to incorporate him into the side, where he's not letting those talents go to waste in terms of, you know, trying him out in midfield. I don't know if it'll work considering, you know, obviously Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice, they're kind of pretty firm, permanent fixtures in that midfield, and rightly so, to be fair, because they really complement each other nicely, especially in that Euro 2020 campaign. But I don't, as you said, I feel like that kind of game is the perfect game to experiment, considering England are at the top of the league, at the top of the table, with 15 points. And I'm sure Southgate will be playing a way more realistic long-term team against Poland, since Poland are only 5 points away. All could change if Poland managed to get a result in Warsaw, especially with only 4 games to go as well. So he will definitely revert back to how he wants the team to set up. But the Alexander-Arnold one, I think it's a nice experiment. Why not?
Yeah, as you say, England 5 points clear at the top of the group. I think Poland are second or third in the group as things stand. But there's still a few games to go, and San Marino and Andorra are both in the group. So you'd have to think England, Hungary and Poland, it is a kind of a three-way dance between those guys as to who is going to come out top of the group and qualify for the World Cup. Just a quick side note, Ian, I heard a car, by the way. We've got our first car of the podcast zooming past your past your studio.
I think we just had a barking dog as well. It's tick them off on the
Ian Brannan bingo card. Yeah, absolutely. I tell you what, it would be bingo for Poland if Lewandowski manages to fire. He is a hell of a striker. Looks like he could be back in the setup for the national side for this game against England. He's the obvious threat there, isn't he? And I'm sure when you spoke to the Polish journalist earlier today, Ian, Lewandowski would have been mentioned. And if Harry Kane starts for England, it'll be interesting to see the Kane versus Lewandowski comparisons, because when we're talking about the best number nines, the best strikers in the world, these two names are the obvious two that crop up.
Yeah, Lewandowski is the only worldie, really, in the Polish team, isn't he? You know, he's, if you had a world team or whatever, you know, he would probably be in contention. So definitely, he's, you know, serious threat. I asked the question to Matt Say, my man in Poland, who works for 11 Sports, which bizarrely is a company that Andrea Radriozani is actually the boss of. So it's a nice Leeds United link there. But a big TV channel in Poland, they do all the sports stuff. And I asked him about the other threats, you know, who should we be watching out for in the Polish team tonight? It starts off with the goalkeeper, Szczęsny. We know about him. He's played in the Premier League. A lot of the threats really play in the Premier League. A really solid goalkeeper, he says, but we never know what he can do. Maybe a magnificent match, maybe not.
Solid, kind of solid reminiscent of his former club Arsenal then, in that case.
Exactly. When you're thinking of Poland, think Arsenal. Could be brilliant, might be terrible, not sure. Jan Bednarek from Southampton is a solid defender that he wants to point out. Also, again, sometimes brilliant, sometimes bad. And Jakub Moda, who is a young attacker who plays for Brighton, yeah, I think, in the Premier League, to watch out for. And Kamil Joswiak, who is a player for Derby County and might be involved tonight, did really well versus Hungary and Albania in their recent matches. Those are the names to watch out for in the Polish team. So they've got threats. I think, as we mentioned, it's just that inconsistency with Poland. They can demolish any side in the world on their day. Will today be their day? We will find out later on this evening. That's the thing. But yeah, Lewandowski, if he plays clearly, that's going to be one to keep the defence pretty busy tonight.
And you know what? Poland have actually got quite a few talented players that aren't in the international setup at the moment, or at least haven't been called up for this group of World Cup qualification games. Players like Lukasz Fabianski, who is the goalkeeper for West Ham United, Krzysztof Piątek, Arkadiusz Milik, Mateusz Klik, who plays for Leeds United, as you know. And there's a 17-year-old lad who I think is a really exciting talent, particularly for Polish fans coming through. His name's Kasper Kozłowski, who is, for me, one of the rising stars in Polish football. So I'm a bit surprised to see him not involved, because I'm almost certain that he was involved in the European Championship squads. But anyway, that's tonight's fixture. England against Poland in Warsaw. A win for England would certainly put them in cruise control in their World Cup qualification group. Even if they don't pick up the 3 points, I think they've still got a decent chance of qualifying for the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. And for that World Cup, will Jesse Lingard be in the frame to be part of the England squad, which does make the trip to the Middle East? He's 28 now. He's at Manchester United, but he's rejected a new contract with the club. We'll talk about it next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. Niall McCorn here, Joel Tudor, Ian Brennan alongside me, and time to talk about Jesse Lingard. Not for the first time this summer we've spoken about Lingard on Football Social Daily. He is, of course, a Manchester United player. He's in the final year of his contract. He was on loan at West Ham last season and put in some excellent performances as the Hammers surprised many and qualified for Europe, very nearly qualifying for the Champions League. In the end, it was the Europa League they had to settle for, and Lingard was a key part in that qualification for European competition this season. He's decided, though, over the summer that he wants to stay and fight for his place at Manchester United. And he's been offered a new deal by the club, which allegedly, according to sources, has been rejected. Jesse Lingard offered a new deal, rejects the new deal, begs the question to me, Joel, why did he stay at United this summer in the first place if he was just going to reject a new contract?
Honestly, this is the most confusing situation, and it's the most obvious answer as well, which I can't understand, because obviously he went to West Ham, picked up some really, really good form, kind of rediscovered himself again, became a real nice focal, important point of a team who were really nearly on the cusp of Champions League qualification thanks to, you know, his 9 goals and 4 assists in 14 games, which is really impressive, especially going into a new side. But I wonder, like, did he know that there was a 2-month transfer window just gone? Because he now wants reassurances that he's going to get games. Yet he's stayed beyond the transfer window. It's a baffling situation because, you know, through no fault of his own, he can't get into the team right now despite being on good form. Obviously, he got his two goals for England, really good West Ham form on the back of the last season. Through no fault of his own, he has two way better players ahead of him, and that's Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba. And I don't know if he feels as though his ability is like way better than what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer believes it is, where he can actually force his way into that side. But it's just so unrealistic for me, and I'm so surprised that he wants to kind of gamble on his playing time and wants reassurances now that the window's done, when there's a World Cup coming up in a year and a half, and I'm sure he'll very much want to be involved in that after he missed out on the Euro squad, purely because he wasn't getting any game time. It's a very, very confusing situation, and I definitely think that, especially with Mino Raiola representing him, I wouldn't be surprised if he's been kind of told in his ear to, you know, maybe run down his contract, sign on a free for somewhere. It's a baffling situation. I don't know the ins and outs of what's going on with how he thinks about his playing time, but quite clearly he's not a chance going to get the same amount of game time at West Ham than he would at United this season.
Yeah, I'm totally in agreements with you. I think that he would get more games at West Ham. But that being said, Ian, United do have the Champions League and Carabao Cup to come in the next couple of weeks. The schedule does intensify, more competitions are introduced. Do you think that will give Jesse Lingard a clearer sign as to whether the manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, will use him regularly this season? Because so far, he's played just 4 minutes of football this term, which was a substitute appearance at the end of the Southampton game, which United drew 1-1. And, you know, if you think of Lingard's performances for West Ham, what you want is him taking the game to the opposition by the scruff of the neck, and he only had 4 minutes to do that. So, actually, with that in mind, do you think we will learn a little bit more, and will Lingard learn a little bit more in the next month or so as to whether he truly is going to get more game time this campaign?
Well, I mean, number one, I mean, you can't go into your manager, especially in a team like Manchester United, where you've got so many good players, and demand to be assured that you're going to be playing. I mean, because that just forces the hand of the manager, doesn't it? Where do you go with that? What's then to stop any other player marching in there and wanting guaranteed time? With the best will in the world, Jesse Lingard is no Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo can say, well, if I'm going to sign for you, I want guaranteed time, because he is of a different plane with the best will in the world to Jesse Lingard. The thing with Jesse Lingard, when you say about him, say, well, he's only played 4 minutes, but he came on for England against Andorra and scored and all this kind of stuff. He isn't going to get to play for England if he's not playing regularly at Manchester United. You know, coming on for 4 minutes at the end of the game isn't and shouldn't get you called up for the England side. When you look at the other English players who are playing regularly 90 minutes and have battled, for example, Patrick Bamford, I know he's in there now, but he was statistically one of the best strikers in the country for England and wasn't getting selected for the Euros. And he was playing week in, week out. And Jesse Lingard, yes, he was playing for West Ham and that got him in there, but he can't expect to keep those call-ups on the basis of historic performances, if you know what I mean. So he's going to have some regular game time. And then, you know, look, they've had a bit of a clear out of Man United. Dan James has left to get regular football, but he's moved to do that because he was told he wasn't going to be playing regularly. Mm. They've kind of given the same sort of suggestion to Jesse Lingard, and he said, well, I'm going to stay here and fight for my place. It does seem to me that there's something a bit amiss if he's got a super agent that he has. I think there's probably your answer. Probably not so clear to us now, but there's certainly some games going on. I mean, he can sign a pre-contract agreement in January, so he's only 4 months away from that. And yeah, just run down his contract and move on somewhere.
Do you think that United offering him the new deal, though, Ian, is just simply so... Well, they know United, don't they, that West Ham and others are probably interested. Do you think they're just offering Lingard a new deal in the hope that he signs it, his wages gets a bit of a boost, and also they can recoup some money for him? If someone comes in for him in January or the summer, they can sell him for a higher fee than what they would have sold him for in the window just gone?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, if you know that a player is likely to move on, you want to maximise your value for it. So they're going to offer him a short-term contract, even if it's just for another year or another 2 years, that would... you know, increase his value on the transfer market, that he can't just walk out the door and they get nothing back on the investment they've put into him, because he has been with Man United quite a long time. They've invested a lot of money in him, in fixing him up from injury, for example, you know, and all the training that he's had and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, if you have something that technically you own, and unfortunately, I don't want to talk about footballers as commodities, but that's kind of what they are, you want to sell it for the best price, don't you? And so giving a player a contract assures you you're going to get a minimum amount of money for that player. Alternatively, you can just wind it down and, you know, rot away in the reserves for a few months and just walk out of there with nothing. And that's what they're trying to avoid. And seems to me that maybe there's some kind of involvement with an agent, and you know, that which favours them, the deal that favours the player and the agent. So yeah, maybe a bit of a Mexican standoff there. But it's not going to do Lingard good in the short term, though, because he's going to end up dropping out of the England contention. He's going to end up dropping out of Man United contention. It's going to all end in sour grapes.
Do you think, Joel, that maybe Lingard was waiting for offers from clubs other than West Ham during the summer? Do you think that there's a possibility that could have been the case? Because obviously, as good as his football was at West Ham, having played for Manchester United and been a first-team regular and an England regular over the however many years previous to his loan move to West Ham, perhaps he felt that he was, with no offence to the Hammers, of a better calibre than West Ham United.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you've grown up in a Manchester United side where he's been used to Champions League football, getting called up to the World Cups, Euros, I feel like he does have a bit of entitlement to feel as though, I feel like I'm better at a better level than West Ham. Obviously, no offence to West Ham. It was obviously reported, I think, around a year and a half ago when he wasn't getting game time, when he actually switched agents to Mino Raiola to represent him. It was purely due to getting better prospects for himself in terms of potentially, you know, going to Inter Milan or one of these European super clubs where he probably sees himself as that kind of level. I'm not so sure that he could contribute at that level consistently, but it's very baffling to me how I feel as though with this Manchester United situation at the moment, he wants to be part of this exciting new team that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's made, where, you know, he's got Ronaldo, maybe he wants to do a celebration with him or something like that. But, you know, he's got Ronaldo, he's got a really exciting team. Potentially, he feels as though West Ham is a bit of a step down and he wants to still see himself in that kind of stature of club at Manchester United. Potentially, who knows, it might be family reasons. There could be a number of reasons, but I definitely do feel as though it's got something to do with agent whispers in his ear, and there is some kind of underhand deals where obviously players nowadays are getting way bigger, more of a payday if they just run the contract down and leave on a Bosman, which is what's happened, you know, yeah, like Donnarumma.
Get that big signing on bonus.
Yeah,
when you sign for a new club.
It's in the benefits of everyone. And the only problem is he's not exactly got time on his side. I'm not saying he's an old player, but I mean, he's approaching 30 now, and having a year and a half out of football pretty much sat on the sidelines is going to do him absolutely no good at all. Especially with Qatar coming up, and this might be his last opportunity to actually get into a major tournament side with England. So it was definitely in his best interest, I feel, to leave. I don't know if Manchester United priced him out potentially, where obviously, you know, maybe they wanted 25 million and West Ham were only willing to do 15, considering they can get him on a free next year.
Yeah.
So I definitely feel as though there's a error on both sides where they're both looking at the best interests and they're just currently not matching at all.
It's an interesting debate to be had about Jesse Lingard. We don't know really the situation behind the scenes. All we can do is speculate, but what we do know is that he's rejected a new Manchester United contract. The Champions League is back for Manchester United next week and a host of other English clubs. They take on BSC Young Boys over in Bern. But we don't know just yet whether Manchester United fans will be able to travel, even though UEFA have lifted the ban on travelling away supporters in European competition. We'll discuss more about that next here on Football Social Daily.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily from Sports Social, part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. If you don't know about it already, the Podcast Network has loads of great shows on there, from Speedway to Snooker and loads of other football stuff as well. Even some wrestling podcasts on there, if that's your cup of tea. Go and check it out, sport-social.co.uk. Click the podcast tab and you can find loads of great content there. All of the podcasts will be on your usual podcast platform or provider, so go and check that out. Time to talk about UEFA lifting the ban on travelling away fans in European competition. This is one of those pieces of news which, again, is coronavirus related, and unfortunately, it seems to be the case at the moment that a lot of the things we talk about are related to COVID-19, because despite the fact football is trying to carry on with COVID-19 still around, it's always going to kind of rear its ugly head and throw a spanner in the works here and there. We saw it in the World Cup qualifier between Brazil and Argentina, health officials running onto the pitch, but a bit more positive news from a UEFA standpoint, and that's that they've lifted the ban on travelling away fans in the Champions League, the Europa League and the Europa Conference League. All three competitions kick off next week with the first round of group games. Great news for fans of English sides, Ian. They are going to be able to travel to Europe and watch their teams play. The bad news is there's lots of hoops to jump through with this, and they'll still need to adhere to the relevant rules and regulations for the country that they're travelling to. So it all seems a little bit like, oh, great, but also it's not quite exactly how it was.
Yeah, well, it's just travel generally, isn't it? Travel generally is a lot more complicated, and I've got some friends who have been away to various countries. I know some people who have been to America, some people who have been to Italy, Croatia, France, Portugal, I think, and they all say the same thing, that it takes a lot of form filling in. There's a lot of admin involved, which is going to put a lot of people off. And some of that admin is down to COVID. Some of that admin is down to Brexit. So travel is more complicated than it was, but there's a number of factors to that. I think having to pay for testing, which you would probably have to do, will put a lot of people off. Puts a lot of people off when you don't have to pay for it, let alone having to, you know, fork out £200 or more to get tests, depending on what country you're going through. I mean, it's good that it's possible for those who are really that keen and want to do it. You know, it is an option at least now, whereas before it wasn't something you could even consider. It wasn't available. So, yeah, if you want to go, a lot of hoops to jump through. It's possible. It'll put a lot of people off. But if you're that keen, and even though you want to fill the forms in and take the tests and maybe do quarantine, depending on where you're going, are you really going to go to your boss and say you want to watch Young Boys at Stadion Wankdorf in Bern? that's the other thing you've got to consider as well. But good luck to you if you're that guy.
To be fair to Ian, he is not being tongue-in-cheek there. That is quite literally the name of their stadium and the name of their club. Manchester United do face them on Tuesday evening. I mean, we can say that, you know, it's a start, Joel, isn't it? Because there's rumours that a UK lockdown could be enforced in October. And that will lead again to questions of when will we resume regularity in football, where people can go where they want, when they want to watch their clubs. Is it just something that fans are going to have to take on the chin? Some games they're going to be able to watch, others they're not. Is that just the pinch of salt you're going to have to take with the situation?
Yeah, I think it's a new normality that everyone's slowly adapting to, but especially for the Champions League, I think it's absolutely vital to have fans in those European stadiums, because I remember watching the campaign when the pandemic first broke out, when it was the Bayern Munich versus Paris Saint-Germain final. And I think it was the most soulless final I think I've ever watched in my entire 24 years of watching. Like, it was just, it was soulless. It felt like a testimonial the way it was playing.
Yeah.
Especially in the European games where you have, like, you know, your Galatasaray's, Fenerbahce's, where their fans make life hell and difficult for opposing sides. And if now you were to go to Galatasaray and play, it would just feel like any other fixture. And I feel like it's so important, especially for the European atmosphere, the European games, the speed of the games as well, which seemed to really, really suffer when there was no fans in the stadium. So especially for, like Ian was saying, there's going to be dedicated fans for every single team that are 100% will do, and we'll go and follow their team no matter how many PCR checks and swabs up your nose you have to have. But it is a new norm that I think everyone's going to have to begin to get used to. Obviously, I don't want to talk about like the political side or you'd be here all day, but
yeah,
it's something that, well, I know, for example, at Old Trafford at the weekend, they're going to be doing spot checks for COVID.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, how comfortable people are doing that or whether people will be turned away. if they get tested positive, and that's a whole new different avenue to go down. So yeah, it's a new norm, it's a new world at the moment, and obviously football continues, but the European stage is just a totally different world without fans.
Yeah, I think from the 1st of October, you're right, Joel, I think the Premier League are going to make it, I'm not sure if it's mandatory, but certainly strongly recommended.
Yeah, spot checks, I think.
Yeah, that you have proof of a negative lateral flow or PCR test within 48 hours of attending the match, or proof of double vaccination. I think that is the plan from the Premier League. Manchester United are going a little bit early on this, along with some other clubs. I think Aston Villa have been doing it as well. But certainly it's something that's going to happen, I think, in the near future. In terms of the issues with UEFA allowing fans to travel to away games, that also reflects not just on English teams, Ian, but on fans coming from overseas here to the UK. And I remember when coronavirus first touched the shores, and there was, a Liverpool game in the Champions League against Olympiakos or someone like that, where a load of fans came over from Athens, and then there was an alleged spike in COVID cases that was attributed to the match. I mean, you're going to get issues like that, aren't you, with fans coming from other countries to the UK. It's not just English fans going abroad, it's the supporters from other clubs coming to our stadiums too.
Yeah, I think, was it Atletico or somebody like that?
Sorry, my apologies to all Olympiacos fans.
They wish.
It wasn't you. When we had the Euros, obviously times were slightly different then, but there was a lot of Italians wanted to come for the final, as you would imagine. And they had like a 12-hour pass, didn't they? They came in, were taken straight to the game, watched the game, and then ferried straight back out again. And that was that done. I mean, the irony was that COVID was actually raging among the England fans more than the Italians. So they probably had a greater chance of taking it home with them rather than bringing us anything. That's the other side of it, I think, that, it is very prevalent in our country, and it's not so prevalent in other countries. So there's that danger of more than other countries bringing us a new variant is them taking our variant home to seed in their communities. So, you are cross-pollinating. It has to be managed very well. I don't know how you do that, I've got to be honest, but it's certainly it is certainly a concern that they're going to have to factor in. And obviously our schools are back now. And yeah.
To be honest, Ian, it just feels like not a lot's changed, except that UEFA have lifted this ban. I mean, it's kind of a shrug your shoulders and go, so what kind of thing? Because they still have to abide by regulations and be negative and all of these things.
Exactly. But this is what's happening with COVID across the board. Is that now the responsibility is being left to us. We've been told that we are educated and, expert epidemiologists now, and we know what the risks are, and it's down to us to make our decisions. So no governing body, whether that's a national government or a football association or a football club, wants to get involved in that, of telling you whether there's a danger or not. They want you to make the decision now. But that is the new normal. The new normal is that we all know the risks, so get on with it if you feel fit or if not. That's just where we are now. So yeah, no, they don't want to get involved. They're not bothered. They don't want to advise you whether it's safe or not.
Well, if the new normal is 30 degrees every weekday in September, I'd be very, very happy with that. Thank you very much for your contributions today, Ian. Studio door open and all, barking dogs, moving cars.
Yeah.
Did a seagull come and nick your breakfast pasty or anything like that?
No seagull, but we had a late charge from a bee that was loose in the studio there. It did leave, but I thought we'd have like one of those episodes like on Breaking Bad, where there's just a fly or something going around for the entire duration, and you can't move to get rid of it. But we avoided that. We made it through. But thanks for having us on. It's been good fun.
No worries, Ian. I'm sure we'll have you back on the podcast next week as ever. And thank you very much, Joel. Jumper's still on. You're looking nice and cool and calm.
Jumper's still on. Maybe a few hours to go and I might put my fleece and jacket on, so you never know.
That would be truly Mancunian to wear a parka in 30 degree heat. You just know it. That's it for today's Football Social Daily. Thanks very much for listening. Don't forget to hit subscribe, and that way you won't miss an episode of the podcast again. We do a show every single day of the Premier League season. We are the only podcast to do that 7 days a week, including the weekends, even during the international breaks. If you like what you hear and this is the first time you've listened to the show, why not hit that subscribe button, and that way you won't miss one. But that's it for today's Football Social Daily. We'll catch you again next time.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.